to know him within 5 minutes, so you don't have to have me introduce him.
Josh Kaufman.
Minchas 5:25. 5:30. Okay. So 5:25. Okay. Hello, everyone. We enjoyed such a wonderful Shabbos and feel really so connected to each and every one of you. So let's just get right to it. Man is the most vulnerable creature. To survive, he or she depends on a natural order that heeds not to man's call and bends not to his will. In a word, as corporeal, material, fragile beings, we are helpless in guaranteeing our survival. And although we continue to make large strides in science and technology, much of which is honestly quite remarkable, at the end of it all... It's very loud, right? Very loud.
Stay, trying to stay a little further away.
At the end of it all, our health and our lives are not in our own hands. We are subject, like all other things in this world, to the forces of nature. We say it in reflection every time we exit the restroom. She'im yifaseach echad mehem, o yisaseim echad mehem. If one of our holes, one of our intestines, have a hole poked in them in our bodies, or if one of them gets clogged, yifshar lehiskayim la'amod lefanecha, and some say, afilu sha'achas, we would be unable to withstand, we would be unable to survive, not even a minute. Indeed, in the birth of our existence, and I'm talking all the way back to Sheshes and Bereshis, human frailty was firmly established. And notwithstanding the divine remedy to this restless and haunting human dilemma, which is what we'll mostly be speaking about this evening, we are no more impervious to tragedy than a flower petal swept up by a storm or a grass field consumed in a wildfire. At least on some level, that's how we're initially portrayed in the psukim, and often I think how we feel in reality, just helpless. The Torah begins, Bereishis bara Elokim. God created a world full of wonderful things, light, darkness, the sun, the moon, stars, trees, flowers, grass, and plenty more. Birds, marine life. We get to the sixth day of creation, and animals and beasts enter the scene. And with them, man and woman, granted with some more elegant features. The Torah lists off the process of the birth of mankind, considering it among the other creations worthy of mention. But the problem is that unlike the other things, the Torah provides not one account of man, but two, as many have noted and have been bothered by. Rav Soloveitchik, in The Lonely Man of Faith, develops this idea that in fact the two stories of creation reflect a duality in man. It is in order to give proper attention to two potential types of people that walk the face of the earth. The first Adam one is a functional being. He asks the question, how do the cosmos work? How does the world work in order that I may maintain dominance above it and beyond it? That I can control the forces in this world to manipulate them for my intention and my design. He is not interested in the question of why the world works, or the purpose of his existence, the philosophical question. All he cares about is how do things work, and how could I use them to better my plot in this world, and in this life of mine. Man, too, however, is a totally different creature. He's interested in philosophical dilemmas. He wants to know why it is that he exists. He craves a connection with the divine being that seems to cast a shadow over and above the world. Something sometimes we feel in a moment of a nice sunrise or a gust of wind, a morning breeze. He's interested not in the practicalities of life, but in trying to master a certain level of philosophical intuition to understand why is it an existential question. And these are the two types, really, the two kinds of man that Rav Soloveitchik develops, which is why the Torah repeats in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet of Bereishis two different stories of man's creation to reflect two different kinds of being. But I would like to suggest, if we can read the psukim a little bit, maybe an additional way of looking at these two creations, not mutually exclusive to Rav Soloveitchik, but maybe just an additional perspective. And Rashi actually explains that the first parak of Bereishis just sets the stage for man. It tells us that he exists. But parak Beit is going to explain it to us. It's going to get into the details and describe to us Who exactly is this person that we were given a little bit of a tease in Perek Aleph? And I would argue, just to add on top of Rashi, that Perek 1 is about telling us what man is, and Perek Beis is about telling us what he could be if he accesses his full potential. So if we take a look in Perek Aleph, in the beginning of the second day, it's the first thing on the source, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Elokim, I'm going to run a little bit quickly through this Pasukim, Vayomer Elokim, Totzei Haaretz Nefesh Chaya Lemina Behema, let the earth bring forth all types of animals, cattle, and other beasts. Vayomer Elokim, Nase Adam Bitzalmenu, Kidmusenu, Vayirdu Bitgasayam, Vovah Shamayim. We're going to create this man that's in our image and our likeness. And he's going to have dominion over all the things of the earth, in the sky and in the seas. Vayivro Elokim, and man creates this being, Bitzalam Elokim Baro. So, and it describes, and the way he created them was masculine and feminine. Things that exist in the earth matter just like anything else. And he blesses them and says that they should multiply, they should fill the earth, conquer it, and dominate above it and over it. And then he tells them, just like any other thing in order to survive needs food to exist, he tells them that the entire earth is yours. All the vegetation, the grass, the fruit-bearing trees, they're yours to eat, they're yours to enjoy. With no aspirational quality, man is just another thing that exists in the earth. He's matter. He too is dominated and subjugated by nature's forces. And just like man is given food to eat, the next pasuk says, and this really concludes Perek Aleph, ulukol chayas haaretz, ulukol ova shamayim, and also for all animals and for all beasts, they should also have the vegetation to eat. Perek Aleph is very uninspiring. It just tells us what man is at his most basic level. And he too, just like everything else, like grass, like trees, like animals, exists. That's all it is. But then you get to Perek Beis, and the tide begins to turn a little bit. Man begins to transform. And listen to this. Vayichulah Shemayim V'aretz. God stopped. But then it describes something fascinating. V'kolsiyach hasadeh terem yihyeh v'aretz. Before the vegetation of the earth existed, there was nothing. No grass. No anything. Kilo, why was it that none of this had begun to begin? Two reasons. There's two reasons why there couldn't be any trees or fruit in the world. Kilo imtir Hashem Elokim al haaretz. Everybody knows, anybody who knows basic biology, basic science, if there's no rain, there's not going to be grass. So God did not cause rain to fall. And there's one other reason why there are no trees and no grass. The Adam ayin la'avodis ha'adamah. Man had yet to be created. For some reason, grass and trees, their existence is dependent upon man's, which is a fascinating concept, that in order for there to be these things, man needs to exist. Man actually can control the future. Man can actually create things. That's the impression Ipsa can give us. So what happens? Naturally, ve'ed yalem in ha'aretz, ve'hishkeas kol panei ha'adamah. So a cloud of mist rises up from the ground and waters the ground. And then what's the next thing that has to do? We said there are two things that need to happen for there to be grass and trees. Right, number one was that there needs to be rain, and number two comes man. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es ha'adam afar min ha'adamah. God takes and forms man from the dust of the earth, blows into him his own spirit, and poof, magic, comes this nefesh chaya, this person, this man. And not only is this man now something who maybe can control the future of how the world is supposed to look, that it's in his hands to control the destiny of wildlife and of plant life, he's actually entrusted with this universe. He's given, as the final pasuk says of our page, it says, and man was given, I don't know if I quoted this pasuk. Pasuk tesvav, Vayikach Hashem Elokim Es Adam, and God took this man, put him in Gan Eden La'avda L'Shamra. Man is no longer just a passerby, a bystander, someone who watches the world and history unfold. But he actually is entrusted. He's the gatekeeper of the world to progress it, to maintain it, and to preserve it. And it is his responsibility from now on to make sure and to ensure that the world would go on the way it was supposed to. But how exactly is man supposed to be equipped for this glorious task? How is man supposed to control the entire world? How is he supposed to be someone who is la'avda u'lishamra? And the recipe is actually in the psukim. Who is this man that is actually in control of his fate? Is the person who is, yes, afar min ha'adama, but when he's given vayibach ba'apav nishmas chayim, when he is blown into his nostrils, the spirit of God, that's when he becomes this man. If you turn to the second page, there's a very important contradiction that the Gemara in Brachos poses. On the one hand, there's a pasuk that says, "LaHashem ha'aretz u'mlo'a." The entire world is God's in its fullness. God owns the land, the world. But on the other hand, there's another pasuk that says, "Hashemayim shemayim LaHashem." The heavens is God's. "Ve'aretz masan livnei adam," and the world belongs to man. So does the world, does the land belong to God or does it belong to man? So the Gemara says such a powerful thing. It says, "Kan kodem bracha, kan la'achar bracha." When is it that man is not entrusted with the earth? That's before he recites a blessing. Before he utters and invocates this name, the name of Ribono Shel Olam, the world is not his, it is God's. He's incapable of being in charge of the world. But after he recites a blessing, after he takes in action something which is mundane, but imbues into it the shame of Hashem, every time we recite a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, we take an action which is otherwise totally, totally material, and we elevate it and make it something which is holy. Only when we involve the shame Hashem in the things that we do is when we're equipped to take on this glorious task in nature. That's when God says, Avdol Shamra. And it's really true. Because without the breath of God, without the perspective that the Ribono Shel Olam is always with me, without incorporating that into all the actions we do, what are we? Afar min ha'adama. Without the breath of God, without the Spirit of God, Perek Beis tells us that what we are just but dust. We are even worse than the animals. When God is not something that is on the front of our consciousness and something we bring into everything that we do. He's afar min ha'adama, but only if vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, only if he has this perspective, this Spirit of God imbued within him, is he actually ready to take on life and its challenges. Only then can he actually be considered a bearer of his fate and someone who can control the tide rather than helplessly watching by as things unfold before him, watching tragedy and watching suffering. But the obvious question becomes, how can we have this perspective that the Ribono Shel Olam, something we can't feel, something we can't touch, how is he always going to be with us? He gives us a task in Perek Beis, tells us to run the world, tells us the recipe, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, and then he leaves us. We don't see him. We don't know so much about him. But yet we're supposed to develop this indispensable perspective that he's supposed to be with us in whatever we do. So I ask, how? How exactly are we supposed to develop this perspective? And I think the answer is tefillah. In davening, we know that there's a requirement that a person is supposed to think about what exactly he's saying, what exactly he's doing in the action, and what he means by the words that he utters. And so the Gemara tells us in source number 2 on page 2, HaMispalel, somebody who davens, Tzarech sheyechaveh es libo bekulan. A person who's davening, who's sitting in Shemona Esrei, must have kavana, have intention, must put all of his heart into every single bracha that he says. But the Torah recognizes this isn't always so easy. Our thoughts wander, and our minds can occupy with so many different things. So if he can't do everything, yechaveh es libo be'achas, he should just have kavana in the first one. And what is the first one? So Amar Rabbi Chiya, Amar Rav Safra, Mishimcha Debei Rabbi, Ba'avos, the first three brachos, Magen Avraham, Mechaye Mesim, and Ata Kadosh. The three brachos that really establish the encounter with the Divine, that describe Him as the protector of Avraham, the God that will bring us back after we die, and Ata Kadosh, and the Eternal Holy One. Those brachos that establish the encounter, those are the brachos that if you don't have kavana for, you have to repeat tefillah. But as long as you have kavana for the first three, and you don't have kavana for the other ones, it's not ma'akev. It's optimal, it's ideal that you should have kavana for everything. But as long as those first three brachos you have kavana for, you know what you're saying, you're good to go. And as we would expect the Rambam paskins this lahacha. He says in source number 3, that Misha Hespala, a person who davens, a person who davens and doesn't have kavana, he should make sure to go back to the beginning and start again with the proper intention, with the proper awareness. As the Gemara says, but as long as in this first bracha, in Avos, he has the proper intentionality, he doesn't need to go back at all to repeat Shemon Esrei. Good, and that's what we'd expect. The Rambam passes the Gemara, that's what the Rambam often does, and we'd have nothing more to talk about. But the problem is in his brilliance, or some might say not that way, but in his brilliance, the Rambam actually says something which seems to totally contradict what he just says. If you take a look at source number 4 in Perek Dalet, what we just read from was Perek Yud, Earlier in the Rambam, he says that there are several things that a person must keep in mind before he enters Shemona Esrei. There are a few things that it's not, you just can't do Shemona Esrei without, for the entire Shemona Esrei. Chamisha Divarim, source number 4, Me'akvin Es HaTfila. There are 5 things that totally destroys and negates anybody's tefillah. Af al pi shehigiyaz man, even though he said it, even though the appropriate time has come. The 5th thing on the list, the very last thing, which is in bold, is kavanas halev. Kavanas halev. If you do not have kavanas halev, if you're not thinking about your tefillah, it is totally ma'ake of your tefillah, and your tefillah is no good. And then the Rambam explains, what is this kavanas halev? In the next halacha. Kavanas halev ketzad, kol tefillah she'ena bekavana, eina tefillah. Any tefillah that was said without kavana is not considered a tefillah at all. It's not. He doesn't sugarcoat it. It's not that it's a tefillah that was bad. It's not a tefillah at all without kavana. Ve'im ispalo below kavana, and if he davids without this kavana, chozer umispalo the kavana. He must go all the way back to the beginning and recite the entire tefillah again with the appropriate kavana. And he must make sure that he's at ease of mind and peace of mind so that he can properly recite this tefillah and not have to go back to the beginning. And the Rambam makes very clear, he never tells us that it's only the first bracha, only the last bracha. He makes it very clear that this applies to the entire tefillah. So how could it be? In Perek Dalet he tells us, I'll say better, in Perek Yud he tells us that as long as you have kavanah in the first 3 brachos, or the first bracha, in Magen Avraham, in Mechayim Esim, and Atah Kadosh, you're good to go. Of course you should do everything you could, people have sometimes have lapses. As long as you have the first 3, you're good. But then he tells us in Perek Dalet that if you don't have kavanah throughout the entire tefillah, it's not a tefillah at all. If you're saying modim, if you're saying v'la malshinim, if you're saying atachone, anything you say, if you don't have kavanah, you have to go back to the beginning. So how could it be? Which one's right? Is it the first 3 brachos? Is it the entire tefillah? So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and we'll maybe say this outside, said that there are actually 2 dinim, tzvei dinim. There are 2 types of kavanah and tefillah that the Rambam's talking about, and each one addresses their own particular requirements. There's the first kind of kavanah that we're probably all very familiar with. Right? It can't be that if you davening something and you don't know what you're saying, that that actually means anything so significant. So he says the first kavanah you need to have is kavanas perish hamil. You need to know, Be'etzem, you need to know on a simple level what it is that you're saying. How can it be that you stand in front of the Melech Malchei Hamlachim and you're speaking as if you have no idea what you're saying? It just can't be. So that's the first kind of kavanah. That's called kavanas perish hamila. And for that, Rav Chaim says, as long as you know what you're saying for the first 3 brachos on a basic level, yes, of course you should do that for all the brachos, but as long as for the first 3 you have that appropriate kavanah, you know what you're saying, you're good to go. That's what the Rambam's talking about in Perek Yud, and everything is very clear. But when we talk about the kavanah Perek Dalet, the kavanah that makes a tefillah and renders a tefillah totally useless, that's this other type of kavanah. One maybe we're a little bit less familiar with. Says Rav Chaim, this is called kavanas amida lefnei Hashem. This is the kavanah you're supposed to have that you're literally encountering the Ribono Shel Olam when you die. Something we've spoken about all over this weekend. If at any point in time you are standing up saying words and not realizing that this is an encounter between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so what kind of tefillah is that? That's not tefillah, says the Rambam. Ain't a tefillah. It's not a tefillah at all. It's not a bad tefillah. It's not an okay tefillah. It's not tefillah. The definition of tefillah is the encounter, the building up of what I like to call God consciousness. Something where there's this constant orientation, where we feel like we're literally in the present, in the proximity of the divine, of the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's the kavanah, says Rav Chaim, that is indispensable. And it's not a tefillah in the absence of. And the truth is that this is exactly the way that we're supposed to build up our perspective towards our life outside of tefillah. That yes, we daven 3 times a day, but those 3 times a day are actually just training for what life is supposed to look like after we take our 3 steps back, do the bowing in 3 directions and step forward. We take the 3 steps back to make a pause in the encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we do, we say, Oseh Shalom, we're upset that we're leaving, and we slowly take those steps back. But ultimately, we also need to take 3 steps back forward. We also all take 3 steps into life that is the life that is ahead, into the time in between, the interim period between the tefillos. Because thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu while maybe is most intense, while we're actually speaking to Him, while we're asking Him for things, while we're praising Him, even though that's when it's more intense, of course the sentiment is supposed to be true in every single waking moment of our lives. But tefillah is the best training mechanism because it really surveys the entire range of what life is about. When you're asking the Ribono Shel Olam, you're saying, Hashem, please, please give me wisdom. Please, Mishanu of Tachla Tzadikim, add me along with the Tzadikim, make my lot amongst theirs. Heal me. Heal my relatives. Heal my loved ones. When we ask Him about the range of human experiences and we ask Him and ask Him to provide for us in each one of those things, He becomes, again, we shouldn't treat Him this way, but He becomes like a close comrade, a confidant. Because, and this is exactly how we develop that intimacy that is so difficult otherwise because of how far away and how invisible really He is to the plain sight of the naked human eye. And so tefillah is training, tefillah is education. You can call it, if you'd like, the school of the first siman of Shulchan Aruch. What is the first siman of Shulchan Aruch? The entire Shulchan Aruch starts in one siman. And it's Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tam. That's what's in the first siman of Shulchan Aruch. That God perpetually should be in front of me. The image of Him, the thoughts of Him, always on my mind. And tefillah is exactly the training that we're supposed to undergo. This kavana, this second type of kavana that Rav Chaim speaks about, is supposed to be that intense training period that forces us to recognize the thought that really is everything. Everything. That means everything. And I want to share with you something which is very, very shocking, to go back to our original question of how man can become a bearer of his destiny rather than a witness, helpless to fate and to natural order. The Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim, Perek Chela Gimel Perek Nunai, actually after having said exactly this idea, that tefillah and that brachos, every time that we utter the Shem Hashem in preparation of some physical act, that all of those things are actually what train us to eventually get to the stage that when we're eating lunch, we can't help but think about God. Like a husband hopefully thinks about his wife. In that same way, we're supposed to think about God. And in that same chapter, the Rambam discusses something very, very fascinating. He says the following. I'm going to read it to you slowly. Hinei hisbar lecha ki hasiba b'hiyos ish mibnei adam mufkar lamikra. That the basis for a person who seems to feel helpless and subject to coincidence, randomness, mizuman le'achel kabehemos, easily able to be consumed the same way animals are. Hu hayoso nivdal mihashem. What opens man up to tragedy, to suffering, and to evil, and to the same things, just like any other animal, any other thing, like our Perek Aleph, is the extent to which he is separated from the divine. To the extent to which he doesn't have the consciousness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always with him in his mind. Unbelievable. Aval mish elokav bekirbo, but the man to whom, the woman to whom God is within, lo yigad bo ra kol ikar, not one single evil thing will occur to that person and that individual. Amar Hashem Yisbarach, he quotes a pasuk which is in Yeshayahu, but it's in a lot of different places. Al tira, do not fear, ki itcha ano ani, because with you I am with you. The way the Rambam understands this pasuk is that Al tira ki itcha anochi, do not fear because I am with you. If I am with you, you will not be subject to the forces and the evil, harmful, noxious forces of the world. You won't be open up and be subject to fate, to tragedy, to chance, as long as itcha anochi, as long as you are with me and I am with you. The extent to which we're thinking and conscious of God allows us to preclude ourselves from being open to terror. But the moment that he leaves us, the moment that we become forgetful, that's when havoc can be wrought. When he's not with you, we're opened up to really the evil that engulfs civilization and nature. Yet, as chilling as the Rambam's warning is, how are we to make sense of all this? What is it exactly about God consciousness, this thing we've been talking about, bringing him with you wherever you are, at all times, that successfully fends off evil, serves as a remedy against suffering, and puts an end to tragedy. How can preoccupying oneself strictly with thoughts of the Ribono Shel Olam make man the taskmaster of his own life, rather than being fated to and helplessly dependent upon it? So as David HaMelech says in Tehillim, and we said in Shalosh Shuvos, Lo ira ra ki ata imadi. David HaMelech says, I do not fear because you are with me. When a person is with God, or God is with him, as David HaMelech here says, and we'll define this just for a moment as the Rav did, this idea of God always being with us, that when a person has, and this is what the Rav said, consciousness never marred by inattention. When a person is in a state of perpetual affinity and constant orientation towards Ribono Shel Olam, a person has no fears. It's not a kavana like kavanas perish hamilim, where you're thinking about the words you're saying and what they mean, that you actually have to maintain a level of focus. It's not like that. Kavana, when it comes to thinking and contemplating about Hashem, it doesn't require active paying attention. It requires a particular orientation. The way your life works, the way your world is set up, what you're doing when you have a free moment, what you care about, what drives you, what gets you out of the bed every morning, that's the kavana that a person is supposed to have in this encounter. And this is the kavana that David HaMelech says, Lo yirara ki ata imadi. When a person has this perspective, he has no fears. And when I say he has no fears, I don't mean that all of a sudden, that life all of a sudden turns into one long walk amid sunshine, rainbows, and roses. It doesn't just poof, go away like magic. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that tragedy doesn't befall the person automatically just because he's thinking about God. I believe it, but we have to further explain what exactly that means. What it does mean, I think, humbly, is that when God is with us, when He walks with us, pervades our minds, when we feel that we are always with Him and that it is what matters most, we can't help but feel that all will be okay. We can't help but not care about the immediate, instantaneous tragedy that may grip us. We're allowed to cry and we're allowed to feel unfortunate. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what drives us, and He is what matters the most to us, and that we know He is with us, and watching us, and wants what's best for us, that's when we're able to say things like, Kishem Shemavarech Al HaTov, Kach Mevarech Al HaRa. That there's no difference between good and bad. My lot is my lot, and I will take it as a humble servant, because you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, know better than all of us. You know better than me, and I know that because I know you. I know you so well, that it doesn't matter what happens. And I might be battered and broken, and it might be terrible, and you may have to cry, and you may have to shout out. But at the end of the day, it will never rock us off the laser-focused path that we have in the pursuit of this ultimate, really grand goal. And I just want to leave us and close us with the bracha that we should be able to focus, laser-focus on our tefillah, step in, have the appropriate kavana, this amida lefnei Hashem. To know that every time we take those 3 steps back and 3 steps forward, what we're entering is a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're giving ourselves a fighting chance to be able to be people that even when we're outside the tefillah, to always be thinking about Him, to always be with Him, to never have to fear because we always feel like we're responsible and on top of our lives. That we're not the dust of the earth that we could have been, but we're the dust of the earth that was transformed in the most magnificent of creatures. Because we've taken the message to heart of Achar Bracha, of including the Ribono Shel Olam and who we are in our core, and walking heads held high, knowing that we have great things in store for us. Lo ira ra ki ata imadi. Have a good evening.